Hello and welcome to the Conscious Leadership Podcast. My name is Julie Hoglin and I am the creator and founder. This podcast covers every aspect of conscious leadership and the Conscious Leadership Code. And if there is a particular example or angle or subject you would like an episode on, please reach out and let me know and I will create it specifically for you. Hi, conscious leaders, listeners. This episode has come about because of a piece of consultancy work that I'm currently doing, and I'm writing a report as such to six business owners that are working together to run their business. And the reason that I have started to work with them is that their relationships are breaking down and they're not effectively communicating with each other to manage their business, and it is negatively affecting the business, as in staff members are leaving, the culture is not conducive, things aren't happening, you know, down to simple things like rotas not being completed. And this particular group, and they are all fabulous people, you know, please hear this, business relationships and relationships break down. It doesn't mean they break down because people are not good people. They break down because the communication and the, I'm going to say the vision, the objective has lost sight. And this particular group, there are six of them, they work in a participative management structure. So what does that mean? It means that not one of them has control. So there is not the normal hierarchical top-down power balance where people at different levels have different levels of authority and can hold the level below them to account. And when you operate participatively, it means that everybody has equal power. And when you do that, you have to have agreed sets of rules and regulations of how you operate. Now, I'm going to talk you through some of those. And what I really want to say is that I have worked in a participatively managed, led consultancy business for about 12 years. So everybody within that business was a business partner. Everybody had the same level of authority to make the decisions to do whatever it was that was needed to be done. And within that, we had a process of how the decision-making structure operated. Now, I worked in this environment for about 11 years, and then I left the partnership. I walked away for various reasons. That will be a whole other episode. And at our biggest, we were 14 people. And when 14 people can harmoniously work together, no gossip, no backbiting, that was part of our rules, we operated transparently, no gossip, no backbiting. Every business decision was made with those 14 people, you know, to make the decision, which included starting businesses abroad. It included closing those businesses abroad. It included somebody going to, so we operated in the UK. Agreed with somebody going to the USA to start the business over there, which then would have impacted on somebody else wanting to live in the USA because everything is interlinked. Everything worked because the 14 people made really solid, sound decisions to do whatever it was that was required to do. And nothing went ahead without those 14 people agreeing, which when you think about that is, I mean, it's stunning. It is just stunning. So whether you agreed or disagreed on the original proposal, through the conversation, through the agreements, through the disagreements, through the support, through the challenge, ultimately, if 14 people didn't agree with whatever the thing was, then it didn't go ahead. And that worked from recruitment to setting up a business in the United States and setting up a business in, at the time, it was Strasbourg. Now, very different results from both of that happening. But everybody within the business at that point agreed with the decisions that were made to start the businesses. And as I said, on one of them, to close the business. We also agreed, and this was back in the day, that we were going to fund the Strasbourg business in particular. And it cost our business, remembering we're all partners, over 100,000. That was all agreed through participative management structure. And when you can create that culture, and it is astounding to work in it, I cannot express how just good it was to work in that. It's absolute pure joy. And it has to be that everybody contributes to that. Everybody believes in it. Everybody is willing to do what's required. The acceptance and the giving have to be equal, or at least understood when an individual cannot operate in that mode for whatever reason. And there has to be an acceptance by both and all parties with any modifications that are made to accommodate external things that affect the individual within the business, because you're still running a business. You are, for want of a better word, you are the leadership team. And that may be the leadership team and you have a staff team underneath you, or you are the leadership team and the leadership team is the business. So again, this works in all sorts of ways. And the participative management structure is that within that team, whoever that team is, the hierarchy of power changes and it goes from the traditional top-down approach, boss mode, to an equal approach model. And as a group, it's a process. And the group, however many is in that, buy into the group intelligently, culturally, with intent and acceptance of the process, which creates harmony. Now, part of when this breaks down is there is a lack of communication, but the lack of communication also comes about from the fact that maybe the vision, maybe the original goal set has either not been clarified to start with, or it's got lost. So please remember, we're all goal-driven creatures all of the time. Everything we do is to achieve a goal that works for us. Now, that goal that works for us might actually be to provide a service for somebody else, but it is ultimately for us. Now, if you want to know any more about this, please, please, please buy my book. It's on Audible. It's on Amazon's paperback or vocal. Setting Goals for Change. I go into so much more detail on goal setting, vision setting, mission, and how so important it is for you to have that, whether it is in your life or in your business, because your goal setting internal process affects everything you do. Just been having a conversation with somebody about that, about myself actually. You know, I know this stuff, and then you apply it to yourself and you're like, my unconscious doesn't like that very much. So why is it resisting the change? So it affects every one of us. And remember, perfection does not exist. So let's talk about this. This is such a big subject. I'm going to get as much as I can into one episode. And again, same with everything. Please remember, nothing sits in isolation. Everything is connected. So if you're in business, if you're thinking about getting into business, if you are working for somebody, or you have people working for you, this is all, you know, if you're in a family relationship, this is all applicable. Convert this to your situation. So let's have a look at this. Within any participative group, whether it's a community, whether it's a business, whether it's a family thing, there always needs to be a set of agreed rules on how things are handled. This does not link to pay scales. It does not link to financial wealth. This is around how individuals work together in any group. Now, when we're talking about business, so the set of agreed rules could be classified as your boundaries. You know, your personal boundaries, your agreed boundaries between the group that you're in, about who says what to who and how's it said. And then if you don't agree with it, what do you do? How do you challenge? How do you support each other? And when we're talking about business and we're talking about participative management leadership, there are definitely things that have to be agreed. So let me just go through some of them. Performance for both good and poor performance. So how do you praise a participatively engaged member, same level as you, remember? So there's no hierarchy in this. It's not to do with length of service. It's not to do with levels of expertise. It's to do with the fact that you are participatively managing and leading whatever it is you're leading and managing. And for this instance, it's business. So performance, good and bad. How do you acknowledge good performance and how do you deal with poor performance? Because it happens. Doesn't matter what level you are. I once worked with a chief exec who couldn't have a conversation with her director, and I coached her through having that direct conversation. And when she spoke to him, he admitted that he was probably only working at 50% of his capacity. He was taking a full and good salary, and he would sit 2 hours a day at a coffee shop reading the newspaper. He was waiting for her to notice that he wasn't performing. Now, think about that. Now, that's in a hierarchical position, but think about that for your colleagues, for the people that you work with. So performance, good or poor. Absence, planned or non-planned. You know, life happens. Things happen. We have people around us who are really precious to us, and, you know, they may fall ill or, you know, relationships break down. So not everything we can do within a working environment can be planned. Our absences are not always planned. But then how do we deal with that? Expenses, salaries, how are they agreed, disagreed? You know, and when you're operating participatively and you're doing it well, all of these things are discussed. When I worked in this participative organisation, we used to discuss on an annual basis our salaries and whether we would propose our case about whether we thought we deserved an increase in salary. And if we did, why? So, you know, you take performance management, performance reviews to another level when you are presenting why you believe you deserve a salary increase to 13 business partners. And they didn't always get agreed. So please hear this. Rewards, what are the rewards? So one of my rewards when I was in this as a, you know, in this structure was 1 year, I didn't ask for a salary increase. I asked for an additional month's holiday entitlement. I kept the same income generating target and took a month additional leave, which was agreed. And it was really interesting. So I worked harder than I had probably worked, more concentrated. I was more effective. I was more efficient to get that extra month annual leave because I didn't want that extra month to negatively affect the rest of the business. And it didn't. And then, of course, I had to make changes to orchestrate that, as did my colleagues, which basically meant if I wasn't in the office, they would take a phone call. That was the difference that it ultimately made. What are your decision-making processes? And I'm hoping that from how I'm sharing this, you're beginning to recognise some of how you make the decisions. How do you manage conflict? How do you approach conflict? You know, something happens, you don't like it. For whatever reason, you're recognising somebody isn't doing what they should be doing, or somebody isn't, I don't know, agreeing with the rules that you've put in place. So one of my ex-colleagues used to go out and do the work, but he then did an invoice for maybe 2 or 3 months. Now, for me, what's the point of doing the work if you're not going to invoice? And as a business, we needed that cash flow process to come through. The conversations around that, especially when you respect your colleagues, can be difficult, but they were had over a period of time because he really did not want to change what he was doing. And change he did ultimately. Attendance. So, you know, when are you in the office and when are you out of the office? And I say that even more specifically now because of working from home and everything that's changed over the last few years. Roles and responsibilities. Who does what, when and how? So what are your duties? Because within any participatively managed process, there will be roles that are required that aren't necessarily always to do with your primary contribution to the business. And you may at this point welcome in a, rather than a fee generating position, you may welcome in as a partner and in as part of this process a cost position to your business to pick up some of the roles that would stop you doing your fee generating activities. And then who is the lead on what? And how does that tie into the business and the team contribution? So what happens is that those roles get allocated, and quite often when those roles are allocated, it means that the other participative managers, leaders, have to provide the individual that's been allocated the role information. Now, what happens here is that they feel like they have a boss. Now, that's not about the person asking for the information, because that has all been agreed in an ideal world. What that is about is the individual, potentially with their paranoia, potentially with their lack of trust, potentially with their lack of, I'm going to say, understanding or even memory of what was agreed. And that can create conflict. So let's think about this. And I just want to say here, nothing stays the same. So society changes, societal requirements changes, depending on your business, the rules and regulations that govern your business, the laws that govern your business change. You know, you may have the requirement to provide additional information to bodies, external bodies. Your stakeholders may demand more. And the things that you have to be able to apply are rules that, boundaries that allow you to run your business effectively. So let's have a look at maybe one of these. Annual leave. And going back to the agreement that I had made with my colleagues about an extra 4 weeks annual leave. We already had six. That was the agreed, you know, terms of employment. So we had six. I asked for another four. Gave me 10 weeks of the year to do with as I wished. What we had agreed within our business was that there would only ever be, and I can't remember the number now, there were 14 of us at one point, so I'm just going to make it up, maybe three people off any one time. So even though I had 10 weeks to take as annual leave, I had to fit that into the rest of my colleagues' annual leave requirements, so there were never more than three people off. And I was very clear about what that meant. So the rules were agreed and the rules were adhered to. And on occasions, especially when it first started, we had regular meetings to see how it would work, because potentially the rule would need to be re-agreed or changed. And that was all part of the original process. So let's have a look at this, because rotas is a big thing for businesses. So, you know, I'm saying there was not more than three people on holiday at any one time. That didn't mean that we were all in the office. There was only ever two people in the office in the main, because the rest of us were out fee earning. So we had two cost centres as individuals within that business of 14 who did a lot of the admin, a lot of the creation work, a lot of the research work, a lot of the, for want of a better phrase, we didn't call it this, but the cold call in to bring in more business. So the promotion, the marketing. But let's have a look at rotas. So one person is responsible for collating and creating the rotas. And the rotas within this particular business that I'm working with currently provide all of the information for the rest of the business to operate from, which is things like booking in appointments, who to go to with an issue, who is on call, on site, off site, those types of things. But without this rota, this business cannot function. Let me give you another example, because clearly I'm not going to tell you who this business is. But let's look at a retail business, a supermarket. Let's look at a retail supermarket business. I used to work in retail once upon a time as a learning and development, in the learning and development discipline. So within retail, the rota has to be done. If the rota isn't done, you will end up with nobody on the checkouts, or you'll have no supervisors on the shop floor, or the fruit and veg department doesn't get filled up because the rotas have not been done effectively enough to allocate individuals into each of those slots. Now, if the rota isn't done effectively and on time, nobody knows what's happening. You know, I have been into retail operations. So I was in the learning development. Prior to that, I was in the audit department. Prior to that, I was in systems implementation. That's a whole nother story and a very funny one. I have been in stores where the rotas have been so poorly done because it wasn't the manager's priority, that I've walked into store at 9 o'clock in the morning and the only person in store, which is against all health and safety rules and regulations within the company and, if you like, within the legal requirement at the time that operated, the only person in the store was the manager. Now, the manager cannot see deliveries in, the manager cannot stock the shelves and be on the checkout and answer the phone, etc., etc., etc. But the rota wasn't done. The rota was done ineffectively. And then when that happens and someone calls in sick, all hell lets loose. So this is really important. But sometimes people don't understand the importance of a very basic function. So within the business I'm working with, this is a real priority to resolve. It's a real priority to resolve, A, to get the rota out so the rest of the business knows what's going on, but also between them as a participatively managing group to understand what the cause of the conflict is. So I'm writing an email to them, basically identifying this and then making it, as I'm doing this podcast episode, explaining what's going on. So have the rules been agreed? Are the rules being adhered to? And do the rules need to be re-agreed? Now, clearly there's a lot more to the email I'm sending. In fact, I'm writing a sort of a document on it. So when you're participatively managing, is the process that is agreed being followed or is there no process? And if a process has been agreed, it's not healthy to resent the process or the person that you've given the role to execute that process. It's not healthy to resent that because it's been created with your agreement. And of course, if it hasn't been agreed, then it needs to be agreed to reduce the conflict creation. And within any organisation, within any culture, there are additional pressures. Always. There's a lot of change going on. A huge amount of change going on. Much of it is being imposed rather than chosen. That creates a lot of internal pressures for the individuals. And with culture, there are choices. You stay because you like it. You challenge it to change it, or you leave it. Now, when you leave it, you either leave it physically, as in you leave, which is what I did to my partnership, to my business partnership. I left that in 2011. So I probably worked in it from 2000 to 2011. It imploded. That's another story. But I physically left. I sat in a meeting one lunchtime and thought, what am I doing here? And in that moment, I basically resigned and walked away with nothing. Walked away with absolutely nothing. So you physically leave it, and I'm not recommending that. It's what I did. It worked for me. So you physically leave it, or you basically leave it metaphorically. And what do I mean by that? You leave it emotionally, mentally, but you stay in it. Now, when you adopt that choice, it can create illness after a while because you are keeping yourself in an environment and in a culture that you don't actually like. And I'm going to use a phrase here that is attributed to Peter Drucker. Culture eats strategy for breakfast. Get your culture right and your strategy will flow. So if you choose not to adhere to the agreed rules of allocated authority within the participative management framework, you've got several downsides. It can create discord and disharmony, which undermines the collaborative spirit that is central to a participative management leadership structure. Non-compliance with established rules can lead to inefficiency and delays because the decision-making is disruptive, the relationships are disruptive. Business processes are disrupted and delayed, which causes much wider issues. A divergence, so coming apart, not coming together, can create a breakdown in trust and respect amongst the team members. And this is definitely happening. The basic foundations of the business flounder. And it might also provoke a leadership crisis. And the whole business is then compromised. Now, there are clearly upsides, and I've mentioned a few of these, to working in a participative management leadership structure. I mean, it is such a joy when you create a participative process and you adopt transparency. And please remember, I am recording The Voice of Leadership, The Art of Transparency, which will be available on my website, juliehogbin.com. I can come in and train this. I can mentor you in this. I highly recommend, if you have any interest in this, come across to my website, or contact me. It's not up there quite yet. I'm in the process of finalising it, and this is being recorded in September 23. So the upsides of it, diverse skill sets. Each partner brings a unique skill set to the table, which can create and foster a different perspective and a very well-rounded approach to decision making. It's when you operate in this and you see it work really well, it's a marvel. Enhanced creativity and innovation, because individually, when you're all contributing, it's 1 + 1 = 3 type example. The synergies, the differences form to create something that is much larger than the individual contributions. So the sum of the parts is greater than the whole, that type of approach. And of course, when people think differently, because we are all unique individuals, we learn to think differently, and it challenges our status quo, which when you're thinking about everything that's going on, that status quo needs challenging. It encourages ownership and accountability. And of course, there is a potential for conflict. Decision making does take longer, but please hear me. When the decision is made, it's solid and it is sound and it has everybody's buy-in. So these quick win decisions aren't always the best, A, for the individuals, B, for the business, C, for the customers. Making good, solid, sound decisions are really useful. It's a bit of a pathetic phrase, but they are really useful. Take longer to make your decision and you will get a better decision made. Now, what I'm going to say on that, and go to my website, I've done 4 articles on decision making. As long as you're not into analysis to paralysis with your decision making, taking additional time will help because it will allow you to do more research. But do not get hooked in research, because there will always be more information out there. You make the decision with the information that you have in the moment. And if you are not operating participatively or not doing that very well, your potential vision, unified vision, which is what participative management group have, doesn't exist. And what happens is, and it goes back to we're all goal-driven all of the time, we will look to create our own personal vision, which may be very different to the vision that the organisation wants and requires. So when you are working participatively, the vision, the mission, the overarching goal, everybody knows, everybody buys into, and everybody can see where their part, whatever it is they do within this structure, fits and flows into that vision. It provides you with your golden thread. I'll talk about that in my book. What else do I want to say? Okay, final thought really, I suppose, on this. If you're not used to working participatively, if you are not used to expressing yourself openly and honestly, if you are not used to challenging others, if you are not used to being challenged, if your ego gets in the way, if you are not used to delivering feedback, if you're not used to receiving feedback, this will be really hard. And participative management means that everybody contributes. Everybody has a say, everybody contributes. Now, as much as everybody contributes, everybody has the right to challenge. Comes with the, you with your responsibilities, with your duties, you have rights and you have responsibilities. So that can increase pressure, and it can, which of course, over-applied pressure can result in stress. Now, again, I've written a book on that, so have a look at that as well. That's on Amazon, that's not on Audible yet. But stress is preventable. And a lot of stress comes from the perception of something, and it puts us into the fight or flight response. So the more you are comfortable with being challenged and challenging, supporting and being supported, and expressing yourself, your emotions, your feelings, what's going on for you, linked to, and in this case, business, the less stress you're going to experience, the less pressure you will experience, because you can manage it. You've grown your comfort zone. So it does and can increase pressure, and developing your skill set reduces the pressure. As I said over and over again, Everything is connected, nothing sits in isolation. But of course, if you can't do that, it leads to the communication breakdown. And that's where, potentially, you will end up in mediation with someone that, you know, if the communication breakdown is big, it could be that you leave the partnership, it could be that the business stops trading, it could be that administrators are bought in. There's so much. When communication breaks down to this level that I've been describing, you know, the ultimate downside is that everything ends. So communication is key. Absolutely 100% key. I can't express that enough. Communication, 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 and creating the culture that allows you to challenge, support, be proactive, adopt change, be flexible, you know, really working towards collaborative, participatively managed and led, respectful working environment. And that's the key to success. So I'll end this episode here. For those of you that listen in on a regular basis, if you think this is of use, and I hope you do, please, please, please share this podcast with your colleagues. You can use these episodes free to have the discussions that you might need to be having within your working environment. You know, I'll remind you, I have been in this business for well over 3 decades. I have worked with well over 20,000 people individually and in small groups. So this isn't me talking to huge audiences. This is me working with groups of anywhere between 6 and 30, you know, and one-on-one or 1 to 2 or 1 to 3. I know how this stuff works. If you've got an issue and you want to talk to me about this, please do reach out. I'm on all of the social media platforms. But tell me that you've listened to this episode on the podcast, because then I'll know where you're coming from. I get a lot of reach outs, and some of them I cannot reply to because it's just random and is not actually, doesn't actually fulfill my mission, which is around enabling and creating conscious leadership globally. And I do that in many ways. Go and have a look at my website, juliehogbin.com. You'll see far more about me and what I do and how I do it. And of course, not everything is on the website. It can't be. It'll be enormous. Anyway, and of course, that's always a work in progress. So please remember, nothing sits in isolation. Everything is connected. And if you want to reach out to me, please do. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Conscious Leadership Podcast. And if you have found it useful, please leave a review. And if you have found it useful, please share it with others that will find it useful as well. If you want to know more about my publishing, please follow me through to the Amazon author page. And if you would like to follow me on any of my other social media channels, please do, which also includes a YouTube channel.